You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the 10th voice. The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM KKFI Midcoast Radio Project or its.
This is the 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Welcome to the 10th Voice on a beautiful Saturday. This is Elizabeth Anderson. I'm here with Linda Wilson, who had another terrific woman song show. She'd say hello, but I took her mic away.
Yeah!
And I'm also here, very special guest today, with Schaefer and Sheree. Hello.
Hi.
And Stuart Hines.
Hello.
And then they're going to talk about Outspoken, a special project in conjunction with the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival and also GLAMA, the Gay and Lesbian Archives of Mid-America.
Yep.
We're going to talk about those. And then David Whitner is going to talk about the local chapter of Toastmasters, Hear Me Out. So let's talk a little about Outspoken. What is Outspoken?
Outspoken KC started out of a conversation with Jamie Rich and then later Stuart Hines. And Jamie is the director of the Out Here Now Kansas City's LGBT Film Festival. And I wanted to get involved with the film festival last year just because I love film festivals and I just think this is a really cool one. And so I was talking to Jamie about how I could be involved, and we got in a conversation about how we both wanted to do something to preserve Kansas City's LGBT history, because outside of Stewart's archives at GLAMA, the Gay and Lesbian Archives of Mid-America over at UMKC, there isn't really any centralized Kansas City queer history or Kansas City LGBT history. And that's kind of a bummer, because we've been here forever. We've been here as long as people have been here. So we started talking about that, and we kind of came up with a project along with Stuart at GLAMA. He came into the conversation, and then later Sheree, about recording oral histories of LGBT people in Kansas City to archive them and preserve those stories for posterity and for the curious and for hopefully eventually historians who will come and write about, you know, what it's been like to be an LGBT person in Kansas City. So it just sort of all started coming from there. And then it turned into also the event in the fall. Sheree and I have been working to turn this material into a script. So we're going to have some actors perform some of these stories, give a dramatic reading of these stories on October 7th. So it's kind of that's kind of the two parts of the project. One was to record these stories and archive them for graduate students or historians or whoever, and then also to turn it into kind of a performance so that we could share some of these stories with the public.
And during the film festival, you had an outright project. And Sheree, I believe you were involved with that,
yes,
correct?
Yes, actually. That was how Schaefer and I met. A friend suggested that I submit my screenplay for the reading that Schaefer held at Prospero's. And from there, he decided that he would love it if I worked with him on the Outspoken project. And so I helped grab a group of interviews and then helped with a little bit of the editing work on the...
And I also wanted to ask how hard it was to get people to talk to you and tell their stories.
Well, I think it probably varied between Sheree and I because we interviewed different people. And just real quick, on Sheree and I meeting... I really, really lucked out with getting Sheree to work with me on this project, because after she read her screenplay, or had her screenplay read at the Outspoken event, and I learned more of her credentials, because she's a Lambda Literary Fellow. She's, you know, she's got some pretty cool bona fides. So I was all excited. I was like, you know, maybe I was kind of going through the list. I wanted to have at least a creative consultant, if not a partner on this project. And I was kind of thinking, like, you know, maybe I could talk Sheree. If I got really lucky and smooth-talked her just right, maybe I could talk Sheree into being a creative consultant on this. And then Sheree was super awesome and got all excited about it and said she would even help me do the project. So yeah, that was like we were very lucky to get Sheree to join us. But as far as getting the interviews goes, that was a very multifaceted endeavor. I mean, for the interviews that I got, there was a lot of networking. Jamie and some of the other people involved with the film festival helped connect me to members of the LGBT community in Kansas City. So that was really helpful, just kind of connecting through people. Got a lot of good interviews out of that. But also, kind of the more fun and, I guess, adventurous part for me was I spent a lot of nights over the summer, and Sheree knows about this, a lot of nights over the summer kind of, oh, for lack of a better verb, kind of cruising the bars and queer spaces around town.
Bar hopping, all of it.
Yeah, yeah. And so just trying to start up conversation and get people interested in the project, and met a really interesting and cool and diverse group of Kansas Cityans from all over the city and all sorts of different gender identities and racial identities and socioeconomic identities. So hopefully we got a good cross-cutting of Kansas City in there.
Well, it's a natural partnership with Glamma. Would you explain how that came about, Stuart?
Schaefer, as he alluded to, we sat and had a conversation with Jamie and talked about expanding the scope a little bit of the project to include Glamma, because he was going to go out and do these oral histories, and it is a natural fit for us to serve as the repository for those recordings. And quite honestly, we couldn't be more grateful for his enormous effort over the course of the summer. You collected, what was it, 18, a dozen and a half?
I think we had 18 interviews, and a lot of them were with more than one person, so it topped out at about 30 stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it really, really is.
And did you find that it was easy to get all the letters of the LGBTQIA community, or all ages?
It took some work. I mean, I think we tried to be really intentional about that because, you know, I only come from my perspective, so I only represent one little piece of, you know, of the rainbow. But, yeah, I mean, I think we put effort into that and, you know, tried to respectfully make sure that we had voices from a lot of different communities. The networking helped. I got, I guess, just kind of lucky on some individuals I met at bars or at social events. I remember texting Sheree one day. This was at a point in the project where we hadn't had enough narratives from lesbian couples represented in the archiving. And I was walking from work somewhere on the plaza, and I saw two women holding hands crossing the street and go into Cold Stone, and I stalked them into Cold Stone. I texted Sheree really quickly, like, oh my gosh, there's a lesbian couple going into Cold Stone. I'm going to go try and talk to them. And I bought them ice cream, and somehow they weren't creeped out. To their great credit, they were very open to the moment. It was like, hey, so you two were holding hands. If I buy you ice cream, will you tell me about that? Yeah, you know, I try. Well, and Sheree and I later joked that I've only compensated two couples, four individuals for their time on this project. And
both with ice cream.
And both with ice cream. So that's how we pay. In the LGBT community, we pay in ice cream.
That makes sense to me. Well, can you tell a little about some of your most memorable stories without giving anything away?
Do you want to go into your interview a little bit?
Absolutely. So I only really am holding myself responsible for one interview, but we got really lucky. It was one of my professors from when I was at KU, and not only did she say she was more than happy to be interviewed, but she also dragged in her partner and several of her friends. And so it was this big sort of party of an interview, and it was really interesting from a historical point of view, just because she's all of them, they were women of color, except for my professor's partner, and they had an entirely different perspective to offer on being queer in Kansas City before, as far as my experience goes, 2000, which was when I sort of started being queer. So I didn't know anything about any of that. And so things like the Women's Village and stuff like that, as well as the fact that they were all just hilarious. And I think Schaefer, in his dramatization for October captured some of the funniest bits. Some of them involve chicken. Some of them, I think...
Well, now I have to hear it.
Yeah, well, the chicken, we don't want to give away too much, but I think the chicken wing story is worth, well, granted, admission is free, but if there was a price for admission, the chicken wing story would be worth price of admission.
If you, like, actually, I think if you ever want to look into the archives, that's definitely a story you should listen for, is the chicken wing story.
Well, I know I read about Leah Hopkins, I think her name is, and... I don't know if any of her materials are in Glamma, but she's an African-American woman who was the first Playboy bunny who was African-American and had a son. And what a story. I remember running across her poetry and her archives, and I thought, wow, this is fascinating.
She is aware of our efforts to reach out to her and is working on it. So, we will eventually make that connection. I am bound and determined to make that connection. Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Because I would love to read and hear more from her. Well, where is this event?
Okay, yeah, the event, it's called Outspoken KC Love and Marriage. It's, like I said, a dramatic reading of true stories that we collected from our LGBT community here in Kansas City. We've got really great actors who are going to perform it too. Shauna Downing and Jordan Foote, both really great local gems of actors. And it's going to be at Unity Temple on the plaza, that big, gorgeous, wonderful church right in the middle of the plaza, October 7th. That's a Monday night, October 7th at 7 p.m. And it's free, and there will be sign language interpreters provided. So we just want everybody who's interested to come.
And how should one find information? It's on the 10th Voice calendar, so
okay,
someone
great.
Can go to the 10th Voice page, and our calendar is there, and it's definitely listed in the calendar of events. But do you have Facebook?
Yep, we have an event on Facebook. It's kind of a long name, but if you search Outspoken KC Love and Marriage, we've got an event for that. I've got flyers all over, hopefully, all over the... So you have to go look for those, I guess. But we've got flyers up in most of the bars and libraries around.
With my face.
Yes, yeah, Sheree is actually sort of the cover girl of...
I saw that in front of the Kansas City skyline.
Yeah, the Kansas City's LGBT community right now. Yeah, it was really cute. The big poster that's up at Sidekicks. I went by to check on something at Sidekicks, and I saw they put the poster up. They're really sweet and supportive at Sidekicks, as well as the Like Me Lighthouse. Big shout out to the Like Me Lighthouse. They've been incredibly supportive. But there was a I'm walking out of Sidekicks, and I passed our poster, and I noticed there was something on it. It looked like there was someone marked on it or something like that. I was like, what is that? And I looked closer, and it was right on Sheree's face, and there were these big lip marks. So I don't think you can get a better compliment than someone kissing your likeness in a public space. So Sheree's got a fan somewhere out there.
Fantastic.
Wonderful. Now, you all have a reading for us right now, don't you?
Yes. We bought a little snippet, and it will be much, much more artistically performed on October 7th by Jordan and Shauna. Okay, well, I can only speak. I'm not as good as Jordan. Sheree is pretty good. This is from one of the scenes, or a moment from one of the scenes in the performance. This takes place between a man who we've pseudonymed Jeremy, a local guy, and one of the interviewers. I think it was me. I interviewed Jeremy. And I'll be reading for Jeremy. Sheree will be reading for the interviewer. And this takes place, we've just been speaking with Jeremy in this scene about the Liberty Memorial, which used to be kind of an underground, unspoken gay hangout back in the 80s and early 90s. So we're sort of talking about Jeremy used to go there and built kind of a social network at the Liberty Memorial when that would turn real gay at night. That's kind of where this starts.
Did you meet anyone there where it turned into anything more than a hookup?
No, actually, I did meet somebody where it was a little more than a hookup. We ended up dating for about 6 months. And that was when I was 16.
Wow. So then, was this person, well, what decade of his life was he in?
He was 22. I was at the memorial with a gay friend from high school. He knew this guy. This guy, Michael, was so cute. And this is the 80s, so his hair was a little bit longer, very Duran Duran sort of. And I just thought, he's the most gorgeous guy I've ever seen. And that was it. That was when the coming out process began for me.
Did your parents have any clue up until this point?
No, not at all. I was trying to, like, casually introduce it into the house, but I still freaked out a little bit and referred to Michael as, quote-unquote, Vicky. And so Michael's and my relationship started to get more serious. And then one day my mom just came downstairs. My room was in the basement of our house and said, "Who the hell is this Vicky woman?" And I said, "It's who I'm dating." And she knew it was a lie. I don't know how she knew. I don't know what she knew. All I know is that she just started throwing stuff. She came at me with hangers. She was just, like, throwing things. I remember a jar of Noxzema flying at some point and hitting the wall. And my mom is, like, chasing me through the house. "Who the hell is this Vicky?" So I go running out the front door to jump in my car to go see, quote-unquote, Vicky. And she's standing. My mom's standing on the front porch, and she just says, "Tell me who this Vicky is. Tell me right now." And I just said, "He's my," and this was the word at the time, "lover." Like, the neighbors were out. My mom passed the hell out right there. She just passed out on the porch. And I drove away.
Wow. You are badass.
Thank you. Yeah. I came back the next day. And my McDonald's uniform and my waterbed were on the front lawn. And that was it. I was kicked out at 16, but we've since repaired. And it was probably a year later I got invited to Thanksgiving.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that's a little snippet from the performance. And that's, I mean, I love that scene, but it's that and even more. I think it's really funny and lots of great local LGBT history in there.
I love true stories.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do too.
Having done this project, and Stuart, this is for you too, do you believe that everyone has a story to tell? I mean, not everyone can write a book, perhaps, but does every person have a story to tell?
I think so, because it's that accumulation of individual stories that tell the complete story, that give you the complete picture. That's why we collect everything that we do, from matchbooks to scrapbooks to photographs, is every little piece tells a more complete story.
And Schaefer, what about you?
Yeah, you know, I think one of my favorite things about this project is it really gave me an occasion to kind of witness and think about, like, people's memories and just how memory works. Because memory, it's, you know, it's not a photocopy. And I just became really aware of that, because in just about every interview, there was at least one moment where the interview kind of turned present tense, you know, where something that the person or the couple was talking about, they realized something new about it. You know, it was, they kind of left their script a little bit and was like, "Oh, I hadn't really thought about my own story that way." And so I just think it's really good for people to share their stories. Everybody who shared their story seemed to enjoy doing it, seemed to get something out of it. There was one moment, actually there were a couple moments like this, where a couple I was speaking with, they were retelling a really pivotal moment in their marriage and in their relationship. And one I'm thinking of in particular, the two members of the couple remembered the moment the same, but they didn't remember the location the same. And I think that's fascinating. It was a pivotal conversation that's very important to them, and they remember the moment, but for one, it took place outdoors, and for one, it took place indoors at their home. And I just think that's fascinating, that you can love someone deeply and love a memory deeply, and still, you know, memory is kind of a slanted mirror a little bit. So.
It is. And Sheree, what about you? What did you find out during this project?
I'm really big on stories and writing, and that's one of the reasons I like to do the work that I do as far as working with kids and writing, because I like to get them to tell their stories. But the thing I probably learned from this, the biggest thing, is that there can be this huge disconnect. And like Stuart was saying, the bigger picture story, but all the little stories can be so separate, when in reality they're still on the same track. In fact, the stories from before influence greatly the stories that are coming up in the present. And we don't always connect them. Like, we don't necessarily have the same association of community so that those stories can be linked. And so that's something that I've been thinking about a lot, actually.
Yeah, can I add to that real quick?
Totally.
Yeah, like what Sheree just said, I was just thinking about that this morning. Was something I noticed as these interviews started to accumulate is locations would show up in multiple interviews, but in different ways. And I thought that was just really neat, kind of the interconnectedness of everyone in Kansas City. And it was, you know, it was 30 people, but it was only 30 people. So it's not like some huge statistically significant survey of people. But one of the interviewers, her story is in the performance, was one of the builders on the Timberwolf, which is really cool, you know, over at Worlds of Fun. So that's kind of neat. And then, you know, in a later interview, one couple met. They both work at Worlds of Fun right next to the Timberwolf. You know, and that's kind of where their love story happened. And so it's just this kind of, huh, you know. I mean, there's no cause and effect there, but it's just cool to see how members of our community have inhabited, you know, similar places in different ways at different times.
Well, even in my own family, I was asked to tell my coming out story to a college group. And my sons were there. They're 26 and 28 now, and they had never heard it. They had no idea. And I said, really? I thought I told you that. It was a nationally syndicated comic strip, editing it. There was a gay teenager in it, for better or for worse. And it brought me out of the closet, just that whole ordeal and national controversy. But I appreciate your coming by. Again, it's October 7th, 7 p.m.
Yep.
At Unity Temple on the Plaza.
Yep, yep.
And it's Outspoken. And what's the full title?
It's Outspoken KC, Love and Marriage, Unity Temple on the Plaza, Monday, October 7th at 7 p.m. Lots of really great stories. We got stories in there of someone who sought asylum from their country in the United States because they were an LGBT person. We have the great chicken wing story that we're not going to give away here. It's fantastic. Stories of Kansas City's women's separatist movement, which was really fascinating. One other story I was going to plug that I can't remember now, but lots of
Well, I remember there was one in Parkville.
Oh, yeah? Yeah? Oh, yeah. Thank you. That's exactly what I remember. A local member of our community who had probably the most awkward day I've ever heard in my entire life. And I'm not going to give away any details. You'll just have to come hear it. But it's just sort of, sometimes things are so awkward, they're like beautifully awkward. And this is like a beautifully awkward, beautifully awkward date. So, yeah, it should be really funny and it should be educational. So, Unity Temple, October 7th. It's free. Outspoken KC, Love and Marriage.
Thank you, Sheree. Thank you, Schaefer. Next, we're going to listen to Aaron McKeon. Thanks for the boogie ride. After which, we'll have Sandra's news from nationally, locally, state. And then we're going to talk to Stuart about Glamma, followed by David Whitner with Hear Me Out Toastmasters. So let's hear some music.
Thanks for the boogie ride. I'm more than gratified. I'm really satisfied. Which only goes to prove you don't know until you glide into the boogie ride. How quickly you will fly out of this world. I like riding in jalopies away from motorcycle copies. I like riding just like you do along the Chattanooga choo-choo. So let me thank you, babe. Thank you for the boogie ride. It really was great.
Funding for KKFI provided by the Weekly Forum at All Souls UU Church. Each Sunday at 10 a.m., the forum will feature a discussion on community issues. All Souls UU Church is at 4501 Walnut Street, one block east of Main in Kansas City. More information is at allsoulskc.org.
This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Hawaii gets re-engaged in marriage equality. A radical fairy filmmaker celebrates James Broughton's big joy. And Butch Voices bridge the gender divide. All that and more this week because you discovered This Way Out.
This Way Out airs 2 p.m. Saturdays right after the 10th Voice.
And welcome back to the 10th Voice. This is Sandra Mead with your LGBT news snapshot for this week. A group of Italian lawmakers interrupted a parliamentary debate on Friday in a same-sex kissing demonstration to show their support for expanding that country's anti-discrimination law to include protections for sexual orientation and gender identity. The new measure, which would expand a 1993 law to ban crimes motivated by homophobia or transphobia, has passed in the Chamber of Deputies in a 354-79 vote. However, the measure is not expected to make it through the Senate of the Republic, which is considered the parliament's upper house. Some ministers also defended the protest online, with Frederica Dega posting a picture of the protest on Twitter and writing, "Equal rights and dignity without gender, because a kiss and a hug are not scary." In San Francisco, the National Organization of Marriage, NOM, announced it was working with another conservative group, the Capital Resource Institute, to target a California law, AB 1266, that protects transgender students in their choice of restroom and sports teams in public schools. Last month, California became the first state to spell out the rights of transgender K-12 students in state law when Governor Jerry Brown signed the bill. NOM previously provided early fundraising and organizing for Prop 8, the 2008 ballot initiative that outlawed same-sex marriage in California. Opponents of transgender student law have until November 8th to gather the signatures of 504,760 registered voters in order to place a referendum to nullify the statute on the November 2014 ballot. In Washington, D.C., a group of lawmakers in the U.S. House of Representatives introduced the Marriage and Religious Freedom Act on Thursday, sponsored by Representative Paul Labrador, Republican from Ohio. The legislation purports to protect freedom of conscience for those who believe marriage is the union of one man and one woman. Ian Thompson of the ACLU responded, saying religious liberty is a fundamental American value. It guarantees us the freedom to hold any belief we choose and the right to act on our religious beliefs, but it does not allow us to harm or discriminate against others. The proponents of this legislation seek to reincarnate DOMA and, in doing so, perpetuate discrimination against lawfully married same-sex couples and their children. In Porterville, California, the city council stripped the mayor and vice mayor of their titles earlier this week in an ongoing clash over a proclamation designating June as LGBT Pride Month. Mayor Victoria Girola had issued the proclamation despite the objection of other city council members. Under the city charter, the duties of mayor and vice mayor are rotated among elected council members who select from their peers who will fill those positions. The charter also allows for council members to strip the mayor and vice mayor of the duties by simple majority. Girola and Pete McCracken will remain active city council members, but without their mayoral titles. And just for a little historical perspective on Porterville, the Porterville City Council was the only city government in the state of California to support Proposition 8, the ballot initiative that outlawed same-sex marriage in California, in 2008. In Vatican City, signaling a dramatic shift in Vatican tone, this week Pope Francis said that the Catholic Church had become obsessed by small-minded rules about how to be faithful and that pastors should instead emphasize compassion over condemnation when discussing divisive social issues such as abortion, gays, and contraception. We cannot insist only on issues related to abortion, gay marriage, and the use of contraceptive methods. It is not necessary to talk about these issues all the time, Pope Francis said. 2 months ago, Francis caused a sensation during a news conference when he was asked by a gay priest, "Who am I to judge?" or when he was asked about gay priests, "Who am I to judge?" he said, about the sexual orientation of priests, as long as they're searching for God and have goodwill. In Little Rock, Arkansas, a proposal to repeal Arkansas's constitutional ban on gay marriage is one step closer to going before voters next year after the state's attorney general approved a request to certify the measure's popular name and ballot title on Thursday. The proposal from Arkansans for Equality would repeal the constitutional amendment voters approved in 2004 that defines marriage as between one man and one woman. However, the proposal would not legalize same-sex marriage in that state. Attorney General Dustin McDaniel has previously pointed out that state law also bars gay marriage and would still be in place if the proposal to repeal the same-sex marriage ban was approved by voters. In Clearwater, Florida, the American Civil Liberties Union has filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Education accusing the Pinellas County Schools of discriminating against a transgender student who was banned from using the women's restroom at Pinellas Technical Education Center in Clearwater, Florida. Earlier this year, school officials allegedly threatened to take legal action against Alex Wilson, a certified nursing assistant who hopes to become a licensed practical nurse, if she continued using the female restroom she had been using since enrolling in the school in November. Wilson, who has been transitioning from male to female and has undergone hormone therapy for 4 years, said she was told she must use a restroom in a storage area, a 10-minute walk from class. Wilson said the school later allowed her to use a faculty restroom, but that the damage from having to use a separate restroom was already done and that she is now treated differently on campus. In Huntington Beach, California, transgender student Cassidy Lynn Campbell made history yesterday, when she was crowned homecoming queen of Marina High School in Huntington Beach, California. Congratulations, Cassidy Lynn. She is believed to be the first openly transgender student in U.S. history to win such a title at a public high school. Campbell now wants to be an activist for the LGBT community and has this message for other transgender teens. Just be true to themselves and let people around them know and not keep it bottled up inside. And to wrap up with a little bit of comedy news, conservative political activist and author Alan Keyes returned to Gordon Klingenschmitt's Pray in Jesus' Name program on Thursday, where he made the case that gay rights would lead to pedophilia, incest, and bestiality, along with the persecution of Christians. And then in Colorado, Christian pastor and radio host Kevin Swanson this week pointed to abortion, marijuana legalization, and decadent homosexual activity as the possible causes of recent flooding in that state. And that's a wrap-up of our news today. Elizabeth, back to you.
Thank you very much, Sandra. And, of course, today's news will be tomorrow's history, which brings us to Stuart Hines and the Gay and Lesbian Archive of Mid-America. Welcome, Stuart.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
And you have been doing a lot of work acquiring collections, and it's been going very well,
I
understand.
It has been going shockingly well. We've been really surprised with the response from the community, and we continue to have material come in, probably two or three donations a month, which is just in my field unheard of, and it runs the gamut, everything from things you would expect like photos and scrapbooks to a recent donation of original comic art that appeared in the alternate news in the late 80s and early 90s. A woman whose partner was the cartoonist and has since passed turned those original artworks over to us.
Having been a comic strips editor, I know how precious those are.
Absolutely.
Because originals, once they're gone,
never would have guessed that we would have been able to pick something like that up. So.
And John Long donated an entire collection of Camp Magazine.
He has,
is that correct?
And he continues to keep us supplied with copies of contemporary issues. And he promises that he will get his digital photo archive over to us at some point.
Wonderful. I was fascinated, too, to see that you have News Telegraph, because when I was coming out here in Kansas City in the early 90s, that was a newspaper out of St. Louis,
right,
that many people read.
Right. It was, and it was, this is, of course, all pre-internet, and so that was your primary source of really good, reliable, factual information from not only across the state, but from across the country and across the world.
Well, now, when did GLAMA begin?
We started in December of 2009 with an initial donation of all the T-shirts from the AIDS Walk. Mike Signet had collected them all from the very first one. And GLAMA is a partnership between my institution, the University of Missouri Kansas City, and the Kansas City Museum. And so the way that it works, essentially, is the museum takes on three-dimensional artifacts, like clothing, and we'll take on collections that are primarily paper-based. So the T-shirts went to the museum, and we saw this as an opportunity to form this partnership. And initially, Jackson County Historical Society was a partner, mostly supportive in nature, and they have since had to move on to other priorities. But the museum, as I said, takes on the artifacts, and we take on the paper. And seriously, it's gone gangbusters since.
And one major collection, I know that you've done major research in this area, Melinda Ryder.
Absolutely.
And you've been doing some drag history research.
Some research I never would have imagined doing 2 years ago. The museum has a program called Community Curator, in which they invite someone from the community to come in and look at something in the collection. And they asked if I would do some work on something from the Melinda Ryder collection. Part of that process, you end up doing a little essay and doing a presentation for the program. And I said, sure, I'd be happy to. And that launched this fascinating, really, really incredible piece of Kansas City's theatrical history that has never, ever been told before. Female impersonation dates back to before the Civil War in Kansas City. And the thread runs through all aspects of the city's theatrical history since. It's fascinating.
And Melinda herself has done drag for 40 years, I believe.
For 40 years. She said she
started. So it's quite a collection.
Yeah, she started. It is an amazing collection, not only of costumes and wigs, but of the paraphernalia that goes along with a performing arts career, things like flyers and scrapbooks and photographs. Kirk Nelson, Bruce's husband, is an archivist since the beginning for over 30 years.
And he designed some of the gowns, is that correct?
A lot of the gowns, yeah. A lot of the gowns, a lot of the makeup. Did all the backstage work at all the pageants. All that activity he was largely responsible for.
And you're going to give a talk on this?
I am going to give a talk on this at the Kansas City Art Institute, the Epperson Auditorium there on campus, on Thursday, October 24th at 7 o'clock.
Wonderful. And anyone who remembers the 80s and the 90s, the Cabaret was one of the venues. The Jewel Box was another. Is that correct?
The Jewel Box actually closed in 82. So it was on its last legs at that point. There were other venues, mid-80s, Stars on Broadway, over at 36th and Broadway. I'm trying to think of some other ones. Stars on Broadway, Cabaret. I think they might have had drag shows at Billie Jean's, which is down the street from Cabaret. Both of the bars were on Main Street between 50th and 51st on the west side of the street. I believe there were shows at Billie Jean's. Billie Jean's was primarily a lesbian bar.
Right. Before my time, but I remember hearing about it from...
Right. It had a light-up dance floor that I remember.
Well, thank you. Where can one find more information on
Our website is www.glamma.us. And one other program that we're doing in October, LGBT History Month, is sponsoring a trolley tour. The museum has put together an LGBT history trolley tour led by noted local historian Ross Fries. It is on Saturday, October 19th. There are two tours, one at 2 and one at 4. They're hour-long tours, and in between is a reception at Union Station. That's where the tours take off from. KansasCityMuseum.org to register and to learn more about that.
And GLAMA is also on Facebook,
Absolutely, yes.
So. Well, thank you very much for coming.
It's a pleasure.
Sounds like a very interesting lecture.
It's absolutely fascinating.
Hope you'll come back because I find sure LGBTQIA history fascinating.
I'd be happy to.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Let's hear from Jill Sobule. This is Elizabeth Anderson. You're listening to The 10th Voice. And the next guest is from Hear Me Out Toastmasters, David Whitner. Hi, David.
Hi, Elizabeth. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. Looking forward to hearing what Hear Me Out chapter is up to.
All right. Well, we've got some great events coming up this coming Wednesday, the 25th of September. Gosh, I have to... check my little mental calendar. The 25th, we are going to have an open house. We're going to have two of our newer members delivering some of their first speeches. We've got one person who's delivering his icebreaker speech where he introduces himself. And this is always exciting when we have a member deliver the icebreaker speech because this is really the first hurdle that a lot of people have to face as members of Toastmasters because there are the chief reason why a lot of people join Toastmasters is to overcome their anxiety about speaking in public. But the beauty of this, the icebreaker and of all of the speeches ultimately is that you're speaking about the one topic on which you are the ultimate authority, and that is yourself. So we've got one member who's delivering his icebreaker speech. We've got another member who is delivering her second speech, one where she's going to demonstrate a little bit of structure. And she delivered a terrific icebreaker about 6 weeks ago. So I'm really looking forward to this speech. We're also celebrating our eighth anniversary the day before yesterday was officially the 8th anniversary of our club. So we've got an event this Wednesday at the Lycoming Lighthouse, 6:30 p.m.
And you meet every second and fourth Wednesday. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And if I were to go to a meeting, which I have,
yes.
How is it structured? What can one expect?
Okay. Within a Toastmasters meeting, or rather an event, as I like to call it, we have somebody who serves as the Toastmaster of the meeting, introduces the speakers and the role players of the meeting. We usually have at least one person who presents a 5 to 7 minute prepared speech, which is evaluated by another member later in the meeting. We have a segment of the meeting which is called Table Topics, where we have a member who serves as the Table Topics Master, introduces a topic, and to which the members then deliver a 1 to 2 minute impromptu response. This is an opportunity to practice off-the-cuff speaking for real-world experience. If you're in a business meeting and somebody who's on your team doesn't show up and you have to deliver a sales report or a progress report, you're on the spot. If a helicopter lands in the middle of your street and a TV reporter shows up and sticks a microphone in your face, you have to be able to talk for 1 to 2 minutes and provide them with a nice little sound bite. So that's real-world practice. We have somebody who times the speeches, and we have members who provide evaluations of the different portions of the meeting.
Now, a question I have is, why an LGBT straight ally chapter?
Thank you.
What is the positive part of that?
Okay, well, that's a question which does come up, and it's one of my favorite issues with regard to this particular club. As I mentioned, everything that you talk about in a Toastmasters club, all of the speeches, whether they are manual speeches which are prepared or the table topics, those are drawn from your personal experiences and interests. And in an LGBT-focused environment, it's necessary to be able to talk about what is relevant in your life. And if you happen to mention a same-sex partner or your own experience with gender transition, it's significant and it's relevant. In another Toastmasters club, it would be tantamount to telling somebody, tell us about what's relevant in your life, but you can't tell us about your kids. You can't tell us about where you went to school. You can't tell us anything about your faith journey. In our club, it's very important that you're able to talk very frankly and without any hesitation about what's relevant in your life.
And speaking of, you've got a very interesting speaker on October 9th, I notice.
Yes, we have a guest speaker coming in, and this is kind of a rare and very special occasion. A woman named Una Nolan, who is a transgender woman, and she's going to come in and tell us about her experience as a male-to-female transgender person. I'm really excited that we've got this coming up because the transgender experience is one that is so sadly misunderstood. And I'm really looking forward to hearing her story because I've known a number of transgender persons, and it's always exciting to see the very different and unique journey that these people take personally. So she's going to come tell us her story, and she's going to also answer some questions.
And I do think your answer about why an LGBT chapter was excellent. I think even the best-intentioned straight allies sometimes tend to lump the LGBTQIA community into, oh, well, they're all like this. Mm-hmm. And we're not. We do all have stories. We were talking about stories earlier.
Yes.
And we've all got a variety of stories, a richness, a tapestry of histories. And I think it's wonderful to have a Toastmasters group that allows people to share those stories in a comfortable space.
Absolutely. And this really lends itself to people building a whole, as you refer to it, a tapestry of experience. The Toastmasters program is about more than just public speaking. It is about interpersonal relations, and also a major component of the Toastmasters program is on leadership. And one of the other programs that we've got going on throughout the year is a series of presentations from what's called the Toastmasters Leadership Excellence Series. And each of those modules is presented by a different member, sometimes a guest member from another Toastmasters club, about another given aspect of leadership, whether it's providing a vision, resolving conflict, any number of issues, and delegation and team building. So there are a number of projects in that along that line as well. So becoming a better communicator can also can enable a person to become a better leader. So this is one of the things that I've really gained a lot of benefit from in my experience with Toastmasters. And we're blessed to have one of the very few LGBT-focused Toastmasters clubs in the entire world. Out of over roughly 13,000 Toastmasters clubs in 120 countries, there are only about 20 that have a focus on the LGBT community. We're blessed to have one of those right here in Kansas City.
Wonderful. And speaking of leaders, I want to give a shout-out to the current leader. That's Chuck, right?
Chuck Franks. He is a marvelous person, and he's gone through a bit of a rough patch. He's just come through some surgery, but I've seen some of the things that he has posted on Facebook, and he has managed to stay very upbeat throughout that experience, and big props to him for that.
So, Chuck, if you're listening, we're thinking of you.
Absolutely.
And well, this is very interesting, and that statistic about only 20 LGBT chapters I actually went to one in Seattle once.
Yes.
And so I know Seattle has one. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. So again, it's second and fourth Wednesdays at
yes,
the Like Me Lighthouse.
Yes, ma'am.
And if one wants more information,
you can go to our website, which is hearmeout.toastmastersclubs.org, or you can find us on Facebook, Hear Me Out Toastmasters.
I appreciate it. Thank you, David.
Thank you so much for letting me on here today, Elizabeth.
And next we're going to hear some music from Martine Locke, a song called Don't Hold On.
Support for KKFI provided by Unicorn Theater, 3828 Main Street, celebrating its 40th anniversary season. Currently playing through September 29th is Venus in Fur, a sexy and mysterious comedy about an actress who turns her audition for a playwright-director into a thrilling game of submission and domination that blurs the line between play and reality. Tickets and schedule available at unicorntheater.org.
Support for KKFI provided by the Harvest Moon American Indian Festival, September 21st and 22nd at Linwood and Troost, featuring Native American arts and crafts, plus live performances by the bands Oasis and the FEO Band. On Sunday, September 22nd, live on stage, Bill Birdsong Miller, John Carter Cash, and Wesley Orbison in their inaugural trio debut. Tickets and details at harvestmoonamericanindianfestival.wordpress.com.
This is Elizabeth Anderson. Welcome back to the 10th Voice. It's time for local announcements. Thank you, a huge thank you to Brent Husher for always keeping tabs on current events so we know what's coming up, and we'll run through these now. This coming Tuesday at the Lighthouse at 7 p.m., the movie night is Leslie Jordan, My Trip Down the Pink Carpet. You may remember him from Heartland Men's Chorus. He also was Karen's nemesis on Will and Grace. So his documentary this Tuesday night at 7. Wednesday night is the Hear Me Out Toastmasters Open House that you heard David Whitner talk about. That's at 7 p.m. at the Lighthouse on Wednesday. Saturday, September 28th, is a domestic violence awareness conference. And as you can tell from Sandra Mead when she does the news, violence is very much a part of the community, against the community and in the community throughout the country. It's at the Urban League of Greater Kansas City, 17th and Paseo Boulevard. That's next Saturday, 11:30 to 3:30. You can find out more information at the 10th Voice calendar or at eventswithapurposekc.com. Then Out in the Crossroads happens Friday and Saturday, October 4th and 5th. On Friday night, it's by Hamburger Mary's, Friends of Dorothy Show, Eddie Sarfati, and a street dance. And on Saturday, the bands Grenadina and The Depth and the Whisper. Also, Jeb Havens, Victoria Barbie, Christy Stremmel, and Tom Goss, who was just in town at MCC. He's coming back. And there's going to be a bear bust that night. On Monday, October 7th, is Outspoken KC, Love and Marriage, which Schaefer and Sheree talked about. And Tuesday, October 8th, is a showing at UMKC. It's the Best of the Fest screenings. It's GBF, Gay Best Friend. And that is a joint project of UMKC, LGBTQIA community, also the Like Me Lighthouse, and Out Here Now, the Kansas City Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. October 9th at 7 p.m. at the Lighthouse, that's a Wednesday, is a community forum on immigration for same-sex binational couples. This important evening is going to be all about the brave new post-DOMA world for same-sex binational couples. What are the options and obstacles? What assistance is available? Hear from local immigration attorney Angela Williams. It's a gathering open to all. And if you have any questions, check with Jamie Rich, who is also the director of the film festival. Friday, October 11th is a street blast and dance party, Shout 2013. The entertainers are Colby Melvin and Brandon Brown, Steve Grand, the first male out gay country music artist, Latrice Royale, Frenchie Davis. It's emceed by Dirty Dorothy, Flo, and Budweiser. At 6 p.m. on Friday, October 11th, is the Heartland Men's Chorus Dinner of Note. Kick off the 28th season with the annual Black Tie Benefit. Most fun you can have in a tux or cocktail gown. Sunday, October 20th at 2 p.m. is the Art of Music Mid-America Freedom Band season opener. And it is going to be at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. I want to mention, too, that on Thursday, October 24th, at the Kansas City Art Institute, Epperson Auditorium at 7 p.m., is Stuart Hines, who was a guest today, talking about drag history. Tuesday, November 5th at 1 p.m., out former Major League Baseball player Billy Bean is going to be in Sedalia at the State Fair Community College. And at 6 p.m., Laverne Cox, transgender performer on Orange is the New Black, the Netflix series that everybody's talking about. She's going to be at the UMKC 2013 Fall Pride Lecture. And Tuesday, November 12th, Ian Harvey Superhero Best of the Fest screening at UMKC. And Ian Harvey is a transgender stand-up comedian. And Wednesday, November 13th, Margaret Cho Live at the Folly, a benefit for the Lighthouse with Judy Gold, Shelley Wright, John Fuglsang, Jim Short. More information at likemelighthouse.org. Again, all events are on the 10th Voice calendar, on the 10th Voice page on Facebook, and also our website. Sandra, did you have something you wanted to add?
No, I just thought it was a great...